Hi everyone, good morning. Thank you for joining. Thank you to Eleni and Kayla and everyone else at Capital Link for having me. My name is Steven Johnson. I'm an associate director on the funds and asset management team at Fitch Ratings, where my primary focus is closed-end funds, money market funds, local government investment pools, bond funds, and a little bit of the subscription finance facilities that our team now rates. Along with the junior analysts on the team, we monitor our existing ratings via monthly or bi-monthly surveillance, depending on the product. We also perform periodical stress tests based on market developments. We assign new ratings and we publish research pieces. For some of the sectors we cover, we publish quarterly or semi-annual dashboards. And for others, we publish ad hoc reports based on market news or developments. And this closed-end fund leverage utilization report is one of our biggest projects of the year. So we're really excited to share our findings with all of you. Before I begin, I'm just going to mention that if you have questions during the presentation, please submit them using the Q&A button on the Zoom screen, and I'll address them at the end of the presentation. Okay, so with that being said, this first slide, we presented a similar one last year where we looked at effective leverage and changes in NAV by sector. This year, we're looking at just changes in effective leverage by sector. So we have these blue bars represent effective leverage as of 2023 across the different sectors, and the gray bars show the effective leverage by sector for the current year, 2024. This data is collected from Closed-End Fund Connect. It's a resource that we use almost every day with our closed-end fund coverage. Covers about 400 different closed-end funds. And you can see across the different sectors that we provided that generally effective leverage is down, with a couple exceptions being limited duration in the loan and high yield space. But generally, effective leverage is down year over year. It's not too surprising given the interest rate environment that we're currently in, with the impact it has on borrowing costs, increasing them for borrowers, as well as economic uncertainty given geopolitical risks with the Ukraine-Russia war ongoing and now the conflict in the Middle East. But again, I guess just to call out a few things here is just first, I mean, looking at municipals, you'll see on the next two slides. That's one of the main sectors that we look at. So you can see that it is down from last year as well as historically, which takes us to our next slide, which if you attended last year, the previous year, you'll recognize this. So something to keep in mind as we move forward through the next few slides is that we collect this closed-end fund data from the fund certified shareholder reports that are filed to the SEC on a semi-annual basis. So while this data and this slide and a few others, it's as of first half 2024, just keep in mind that some funds, they might report on a January, July reporting basis, whereas others might be June and December. So not to say that some of the data may be stale, but some of it is as of January or February. So just something to keep in mind as we move through. So with this slide, we're looking at effective leverage ratios between taxable closed-end funds on the left and municipal closed-end funds on the right, with each of these blue dots representing one closed-end fund and where its effective leverage ratio stood as of the reporting date. We've also included a few lines here corresponding to the 1940 Act requirements for effective leverage. That would be the 33% limit and the 50% limit, as well as requirements outlined in preferred share documents. So just year over year, some changes that we noticed was if we start with the taxable closed-end funds, there's fewer funds operating in the 35 to 45% range. More of them are operating in the 10 to 25% range, so along that green box on the left. So last year, if anyone recalls, it was more of a funnel shape, so almost what the muni CEFs on the right look like, but now you can see that there's more clustering in the 20% range. So in general, there was, some migration from the 25 to 45% range down to the 10 to 25% range. So again, that's going to be a constant theme that we see here as we move. There is just, overall funds lowering their leverage. So as we move over to the municipal CEFs on the right, one thing that stood out to me right away was that typically muni CEFs, they'll operate with their effective leverage right at that limit, that 45% limit, that yellow line. We typically see clustering right along that line. You can see it's about 5% lower this year. So these muni funds are, working in a little bit of a buffer, between that 45% limit. And whereas, we saw migration on the taxable side from the 25 to 40% range down to 25% and below, it's not as pronounced on the muni side. I mean, they're still operating with, effective leverage limits or effective leverage generally in the 40% range, but definitely lower than we saw in previous years. And, as I mentioned before, generally, our thoughts for the reason for this is the higher borrowing costs as well as the economic uncertainty as we move through. As we moved through the hiking cycle, the end of the hiking cycle in the first half of 2024, and now as we move through the Fed's cutting cycle moving forward. So moving along, we like to include this slide. So this is just Fed funds effective rate. We got this from the St. Louis Fed data or the Federal Reserve economic data, or FRED. Online, you can see, we had the Fed hiking program from 2015 to 2019. It was pretty gradual. And then once COVID started, the Fed dropped the rates right back down to near zero during 2020. And then you can see, the aggressive hiking program that the Fed undertook throughout 2022 and 2023. And then lastly, the rate cut in September of this year, a few weeks ago. I guess just looking ahead and just, speaking to Fitch's house view on the Fed. So Fitch's chief economist is Brian Colton. Him and his team, they publish a quarterly global economic outlook. So I know they published one in early September, and they were anticipating a 25 bip cut at the September meeting. And then they actually published commentary the day after the 50 bip cut was done. And they just mentioned that they were surprised by it, and that it slightly altered their outlook, but not drastically. So they're expecting two more 25 bip cuts, with the end of 2024 Fed funds target being 4.25% to 4.5%. And then they expect four additional cuts in 2025, just 25 bips at every other 2025 meeting, with the end of 2025 Fed funds target being about 3.5%, and then finally reaching a neutral level of 3% by June 2026. So again, I like to include this slide because if we were to superimpose it over some of the next slides that we're going to go over, you would see a pretty clear inverse relationship between them. So as we move through, just something to keep in mind. So the first chart that we'll look at is leverage used in taxable closed-end funds. So this is broken out by each half year and the type of leverage utilized. So as of the first half of 2024, total leverage used by taxable closed-end funds stood at $40.6 billion. Across 198 taxable closed-end funds. You can see here on the right, I provided a table just showing the amount outstanding of the different products as of first half 2024. It corresponds to that last column on the right there. So you can see bank debt and repo continue to dominate. They make up about 80% of the total outstanding. About $22 billion in bank debt and just under $11 billion in repo. And then just again, going back to what I said about if we looked at the previous slide versus this, you can see the peak of $56 billion was used in first half of 2022. And then once the Fed started cutting rates, closed-end funds were pretty quick to reduce their leverage in light of the increased borrowing costs. So you can see here, If we look at from that peak in the first half of 2022 down to first half of 2024, overall leverage used by taxable closed-end funds is down about 15 billion or 27%, with repo utilization being down about 45%, which isn't too surprising given that that is one of the easier levers that closed-end funds can pull when they need to reduce leverage. And just overall, like I said, across all the different products here, utilization is down with the exception of public preferred shares. They were the one product that actually saw growth from the first half of 2022 to the first half of 2024. They actually grew from 2.5 billion in 2022 up to 4 billion in the first half of 2024. And the last thing I'll note here is just you can see a slight tick up from the second half of 23 to the first half of 24. As funds are anticipating the Fed cutting rates, we did see a slight uptick in leverage utilization during the first half of 24, with an increase of about 900 million or about 2.3%. Moving along, next we'll look at leverage used in municipal closed-end funds. So similar to the last chart, you can see here this is broken down by half of year with the rightmost column being the first half of 24. As of the first half of 2024, we found 28.4 billion in outstanding leverage across 101 U.S. municipal closed-end funds. Similar to how bank debt and repo dominate for taxable funds in this space, it's VRDPs, variable and fixed muni term preferred shares, and TOBS. About 9 billion or 32% is VRDPs, just under 9 billion or 30% is the variable or fixed muni term preferred shares, and about 20% or 6 billion of the total as of first half of 24 was TOBS. So again, a similar pattern as we saw in the taxable fund chart, just not as pronounced. Muni closed-end funds just typically aren't as impacted by changes in borrowing costs. And then similar to the taxable funds, there was the peak was reached in the first half of 2022. It was at 38 billion, and it's been or there's been about a 25% drop or $10 billion to where we stand as of the first half of 2024. Unlike the taxable space, there was a drop between the second half of 23 and the first half of 24. It's down about 2%. But again, a similar pattern to what we saw with the taxable funds. And something to note, as we collected this data, we did notice this year more than the past few years, there was more consolidation, just done via mergers or redemption of preferred shares as managers tried to reduce their costs. So that also contributed to this decline in leverage used by both taxable and municipal closed-end funds. Next, this is leverage used by MLP closed-end funds. Again, broken down by half the year. We do include this purple line just showing the average leverage ratio for each half of the year, and that corresponds to the right-hand side of the graph. So for MLP CEFs, as of the first half of 2024, there's 1.1 billion outstanding across 13 closed-end funds. And going back to what I just mentioned with regards to mergers and redemption of preferred shares and just consolidation in this space, there are only 13 MLP closed-end funds that we were able to collect data for this year, which is down from last year. I think we were at 18 MLP closed-end funds. So again, a combination of funds reducing their borrowing, but also some consolidation in the space with fewer funds operating. Moving along, so this slide shows current leverage costs for taxable closed-end funds. It shows the range, and this we're looking at the past year and a half, just looking at the range in the price of these various products. So ARPs, you can see, have a very wide range. I will note that there's very few funds with ARPs still outstanding. If we go back a couple slides, I think there's only about 300 million in ARPs outstanding across taxable closed-end funds, which contributes to, a wider range here. But we did see some funds, paying dividends on their ARPs in excess of 10% during this period. And then you can see private notes, retail preferred shares, and private preferred shares have smaller ranges, which is mainly attributed to the longer-term nature of these products. And some of them also have fixed costs, which is naturally less responsive to Fed actions. And then, wider ranges again in the bank debt and repo debt space, just, reflecting the change in prevailing interest rates from January 2023 to now. And on the right-hand side here, we listed, some factors that drive borrowing costs. So, costs vary by the term of the issuance, the track record of the manager with, better performing managers, historically receiving, more favorable rates, the portfolio sector and the quality of the portfolio, whether or not the borrowing is secured or unsecured, where the borrowing falls within the closed-end fund's capital structure. As I mentioned, the prevailing interest rate at the time that the borrowing is initiated, the quality and type of collateral that is posted for the borrowing, as well as the market timing, which goes back to the prevailing interest rates. So moving ahead, so this is a new slide that we included this year. So whereas the last slide we were looking at recent borrowing costs, this we're looking at how borrowing costs have changed over the past 10 plus years. So I mean, it sticks out, with retail preferred, private preferred, and private notes, pretty steady, not much. Not much variance there. And again, this is over a 10 plus year period. So pretty steady during that time period. Whereas bank debt and repo debt, as I mentioned, much more responsive to Fed action, which again, you can see just perfectly mirrors the first slide that we looked at with the Fed's effective fund rate. Just you can see the hiking cycle leading into COVID and then the reduction in rates going back post-COVID, and then again the hiking cycle over the past couple of years. Moving ahead, so similar to a couple slides ago, this is current leverage costs for municipal closed-end funds. So here, VRDPs and ARPs. Very wide ranges, again, based on the nature of the products. We did see a few VRDPs funds having to pay dividends in excess of 12%. ARPs in the muni space, dividends weren't as high as the taxable space, but still pretty wide range. And again, the narrow range that we see here for MFPs, RVMTPs, FMTPs really just speaks to the nature of the product. And as far as the narrow range here for TOBS and repo debt, that those are really two borrowing sources that it's the easiest lever for funds to pull, which speaks to the lower range because as borrowing costs increase, funds were quick to react and pull back on their borrowing in those spaces. And then lastly, on the right-hand side there, again, we listed some of the determinants of the costs, which again, similar to the taxable space and what dictates borrowing costs there. So again, the term of the issuance, the track record of the manager, the quality of the portfolio, as well as what sector it's operating in. Prevailing interest rates and the market timing when the borrowing is initiated. And then again, similar to a couple of slides ago, this is another new slide where we're looking at borrowing costs for muni closed-end funds across the past 10 years. And I mean, first thing to shout out is just that it's across all the different products that muni funds use to increase leverage. It's all really variable and tied to the Fed funds rate. Whereas taxable closed-end funds, there are some sources of leverage where they're able to lock in their borrowing costs. Muni funds don't have that benefit. But again, there are some areas where muni funds are able to save on their leverage costs. And then moving ahead, so this is closed-end fund bank financing as of the first half of 24. I know this is a popular slide from previous years. So we expanded the list again. I think last year we included the top 10 bank counterparties. This year we included the top 13. So what we see, or what we're showing here in the first column, we provide the bank counterparty. The second column is the amount outstanding that's being lent by the bank to closed-end funds via a direct facility, a loan, or margin lending. And you can see during the first half of 2024, this total came out to just under $22 billion. The second column shows the number of closed-end funds borrowing from each of these banks. The next column shows the amount outstanding in reverse repos across the different banks, so where the banks are lending to. The next column is the number of closed-end funds. So you can see for reverse repos, there's about $11.5 billion outstanding across 259 different closed-end funds. And then the next to last column is the total. So if you sum up the facility column and the reverse repo column, you would have the total amount that's being lent by the bank to closed-end funds. And you can see at the bottom, the total is $33.5 billion, which is up quite a bit from last year. When we looked at first half of 2023, it's up about 9% or about $3 billion from last year. And then the last column on the right, we just show the percent of the grand total for each bank. Moving ahead, again, this is another new slide. So this one, we added this based on feedback that we've received in previous years. Which I'll mention now that, we're very open to feedback. We receive lots of requests for these reports each year when we publish them. So again, this was added based on feedback that we received. There were a few market participants that reached out and, they suggested it would be really interesting to show, we've shown the amount outstanding in preferred shares and all the different types of leverage that closed-end funds utilize. But they thought it would be interesting to see, who are the institutional players in the space, and what type of shares do they own. So for this, we had to look at a few different SEC filings, but closed-end funds are required to report shareholders of their different share classes that own 5% or more of the outstanding amount. So this isn't a comprehensive list. I think we captured about $24 billion in outstanding preferred shares across 110 closed-end funds, both taxable and municipal. We identified just under 60 unique entities that, held preferred shares issued by closed-end funds during the first half of 2024. And you can see here Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and JP Morgan are really three of the biggest players in the space, with then Vanguard, Toronto Dominion Bank, Charles Schwab, and Federated also big players in the space. And then, as I mentioned, the other column there encapsulates about 50 other entities that own at least 5% of preferred shares outstanding of a certain fund. So again, just going back, like I said, we're very open to feedback. If there's something in, the closed-end fund leverage space that anyone listening here, watching, if they find it interesting, or would like us to include it in future years, definitely reach out, and we can look into what we can do. Moving along, so this really just shows our closed-end fund rating criteria. So we rate the financial obligations of closed-end funds, not the closed-end funds themselves. So we rate all the different types of preferred shares that we've discussed, as well as private notes or public notes that closed-end funds might issue. And if you read our closed-end fund rating criteria, we use the term going beyond the 1940 Act throughout it. And it's really just to show that we're more conservative than the 1940s Act requirements when rating these financial obligations issued by closed-end funds. And the three key areas where we go beyond the 1940 Act and when we examine these obligations are the asset coverage ratios, non-traditional leverage sources, and portfolio diversification. So with regards to asset coverage ratios, the 1940 Act just looks at current market values of the securities owned by the closed-end fund, whereas our criteria is based on stressed market values reflecting each asset class's unique price volatility based on historically observed worst-case price declines and liquidity stress. So we essentially perform a haircut on the closed-end fund's portfolio securities. So our baseline is a stressed environment when we look at asset coverage requirements. Next, with regards to non-traditional leverage, the 1940 Act doesn't capture the impact non-traditional leverage has, such as reverse repos, tender option bonds, securities lending, or derivatives. Whereas our closed-end fund criteria, we capture all senior and pari passu obligations and incorporate those into the asset coverage requirements that we calculate in our proprietary model. And then lastly, portfolio diversification. The 1940 Act has a baseline diversification framework where you base funds have to register as diversified or non-diversified. But Fitch's closed-end fund criteria, again, our proprietary model is able to address concentration risk at the level of individual issuers, corporate industries, muni sectors, foreign currencies, and geography. And we apply additional penalties to funds that, are in excess of certain thresholds that are outlined in our criteria, really just to, again, be as conservative as possible and just address any potential concentration risks that may arise as during the time that the leverage is outstanding. And then lastly, I'll mention as of October 2024, Fitch rates 12 kinds of structural liabilities issued by 87 different closed-end funds, managed by 18 unique managers, investing in 11 different sectors. So really, we cover a wide array of preferred shares, notes, and all different types of portfolios that the closed-end fund managers manage. So with that being said, like I mentioned before, if you have questions, please feel free to submit them in the Q&A box, and I can answer them now. Or if anyone has any questions, please feel free to submit them now, and I'd be more than happy to answer them. If not, as I mentioned previously, please feel free to reach out, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. Okay, we actually did just get a question. Have we seen ratings being lowered in this current environment? So in the closed-end fund space, we have not. I will say that the majority of closed-end funds that we rate, or I should say the preferred shares and notes and things that we rate, a lot of them contain in their transaction documents and issuing documents stipulations that they have to maintain compliance with the Fitch test outlined in our closed-end fund criteria. And if they do not pass the Fitch test, that they're required to delever. So managers are pretty proactive watching those. And if they do see their test results start to slip, they will, either rebalance the portfolio to higher quality assets, which don't receive as much of a haircut in our criteria, or they can delever via reducing TOBS or facilities if they have borrowing through those channels. So no, we have not lowered any closed-end fund ratings in the current environment, but we have seen managers proactively managing their leverage in order to avoid any potential issues. Thank you for that question. Again, if anyone else has any questions, please feel free to submit them in the Q&A button rather than in the chat or other channels. Okay, we're not seeing any other questions, so I think we're going to wrap up here. As I mentioned before, please feel free to reach out with any questions. or suggestions if there's anything else in the closed-end fund leverage space that you'd be interested in. We're always looking to improve this and really just provide the best information possible to market participants. But with that being said, thank you everyone for joining. I hope this was informative, and enjoy the rest of your day.